Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 57 of NML Crossing, which is proving to be quite the snake bit episode. I'm not sure what's going on. I don't know if my microphone's about to kick the bucket or if I did something to upset Audacity, but it's taken me more time than I actually have today to get everything situated and going. I hit record, I do the hey thing, and nothing happens. It's been and troubleshooting. I mean, troubleshooting on the internet is a crapshoot at best, right? You know, you have you're feeling sick, you look up, you put your symptoms in there, and it's everything from a hangnail to the plague, right? It's hard to figure out exactly what's going wrong in a lot of these situations, and this is one of those situations. By the grace of whatever, I figured something out here. I didn't figure anything out. I just closed and opened, I guess, enough times for Audacity to realize that I mean business. You know, we're gonna get this episode out. If I gotta strap the script to a carrier pigeon and send it out, we're getting this damn episode out today. And today is a day where time is kind of not on my side, because not only is my microphone perhaps dying on me, the dishwasher downstairs is, it's not in the best shape, so might have to run out to pick up a new dishwasher at some point tonight. I'm just waiting on the thumbs up or the thumbs down. But it's not all bad news here at the House of Chris, because a couple hours ago, I got an email from our friends at Podbean. And, when you see an email from Podbean, I usually figure it's like a new feature that they're, trying to sell you or get you to sign up to beta test or whatever. But this one actually said, congratulations, you've recorded 1,000 episodes. So the last episode of NML Crossing was episode 1,000 for the Chris and Reggie channel, which is a bittersweet. Bittersweet, but pretty cool at the same time. So this episode is episode 1001, I suppose, which is it's doing its damnedest not to actually allow me to get through it. But we are here, and without any further ado, since I don't have much ado today, let's hop right in. Today we're kicking off a new arc. It's only a two-issue arc, and we're kicking it off in Batman Legends of the Dark Knight number 117, had a May 1999 cover date, and our story is called Bread and Circuses Part 1. Now, Bread and Circuses, I'm sure a lot of folks know the origins, or at least are sort of familiar with the saying. It's basically a way to distract the masses during, times of tumult. It was originated, they say, by the Roman poet Juvenal, and as we work our way through it, we'll see just how true it rings for our little, corner of the world here in no man's land. This issue was written by a fellow whose last name I've been dreading saying, Ian Edginton? Edgington? I can't say words. You guys know that. Art by D'Israeli. Letters, John Costanza. Colors, D'Israeli and Digital Chameleon. Edits, Illidge, Gorfinkel, and O'Neill. Cover price, $1.99. Now, we open with Batman descending upon a group of gangbangers, and I'm not entirely sure which gang these goofs are a part of. Though, if I had to guess, I'd say it's either the Wreckers or the Joza, since they don't appear to be street demons or low boys. Anyway, as Batman beats the bejesus out of them, he's thinking to himself how his time away from No Man's Land has caused his reputation to take quite a hit. You see, ne'er-do-wells no longer respect nor fear him. He thinks to himself he's going to have to do something really big, really high profile, in order to correct that. And last episode, or the one before that, I mentioned how I got the feeling that these opening arcs were written where they were assigned and they were written, but I don't know that the writers got the memo on what order they were going to be published in. Because this is our third, not counting Asriel, because why would we count Asriel? This is our third arc for No Man's Land proper. And in each one so far, Batman has the same plan. trying to get the message out there that he's back and he's, you know, not suffering fools, right? So whatever he's going to do here, I guess that's got to be bigger than him being shot in front of a whole bunch of gangbangers and then standing up. Or bigger than that display back at Father Chris's cathedral during, Fear of Faith? I don't know. Anyway, as the dust settles, we see the main crux of the battle as well as the introspective chatter regarding the reputation of the Bat. Now you see, the gangbangers spray-painted their tag over a Bat tag. Now, this could be seen as an indictment on just how unseriously Batman is viewed in No Man's Land. And, how the common rabble of No Man's Land don't even fear him. Now, Batman forces the last standing baddie to repaint the bat tag on the alley wall. Elsewhere, we join the GCPD as they are, they're pretty much getting their asses handed to them by some other gangbangers. And, I mean, it's, like, truly primal stuff here. The bad guys here, they're literally hurling crude spears at our blue boys here. Harvey Bullock actually takes an arrow right through the trench coat. Ooh, lucky for him, he's lost a ton of weight since the quake, so it missed his body entirely. Now, just as the GCPD look to be pinned, backup arrives. And so, the good guys are ultimately able to take back one more block of No Man's Land. Though, not without casualty. Now this takes us back to the Blue Boy HQ, where Officer Foley is holding court, and he is, he's still going on about his reservations regarding Gordon's game plan. He's steadfast in his opinion that the GCPD hunker down and worry about protecting the territory they've got, rather than risk spreading themselves too thin by expanding their turf. Just then, Gordon and the gang enter the scene, with the commish himself holding the corpse of an officer who was lost in that last battle. As they walk past Foley, Bullock pretty much dares him to say anything glib. We rejoin Gordon a little while later, where he's trying to convince Sarah, or perhaps convince himself, that Officer Foley is wrong. Now, Sarah doesn't argue, but she makes sure Jim knows that Foley is a good guy, and, he's just letting off steam. You know, just don't take his rambling seriously. He's just getting it off his chest. And she does remind Jim here that Foley did try to leave on Black Monday. Jim and Sarah embrace, with Jim reluctantly concluding that maybe Foley ain't wrong after all. Next stop, the Penguin's place, where he's overseeing some trades. And it's kind of like a dark, hellish version of Antiques Roadshow here. It looks very bizarre. We're also reminded here that old Ozzy gets 10% of everything, which will come into play later on. We watch here as a couple attempts to trade some batteries. Unfortunately for them, Cobblepot's heavies have battery testers. I mean, it would stand to reason, right? And so it isn't long before their attempted trade is revealed to be a scam. Now, of the stack of batteries, only the first couple had any juice in them. So, this ain't ideal for our couple, because you don't try and screw the Penguin. Now, Ozzy assures them that he will not kill them because, well, they could be of use. The woman can be used to, use your imagination. Whereas the dude, well, Penguin has designs for him that'll become clear soon enough. We zoom out here and we see that among the traitors is a fella named Rahiv, and he calls this turn of events into Oracle. He's one of her agents. Back to Jim Gordon as he covers the face of the recently fallen officer. He's interrupted by a voice, presented via odd and wobbly purple word balloons. Purple is in the actual color, not the tone. Jim appears to know exactly who he's talking to, but it is not made clear to us, though we might have a guess or two. Now, Gordon calls the owner of this voice psychotic, to which the voice is all, tomato, tomato, before turning it all back on the commish. He asks what sort of sane man would choose to stay in No Man's Land. And they double down a little bit. What kind of sane man would let his wife and crippled daughter remain alongside him? Now the voice is not here to fight. It's not looking for any trouble. It's just here to talk. It's here to offer Jim a deal. You see, this voice is actually quite impressed with how the GCPD has been operating since the quake. Now, Gordon finally comes around and decides to listen here. But he does warn, should anything funny happen, he will kill the voice where it stands. We close out the scene with the voice telling our guy that he is safe enough for now. Anybody have any guesses who that voice might belong to? I got one guess, because the voice mentioned jokes a few times, which might be a bit on the nose, or perhaps something of a red herring for all of us mystery solvers at home. I honestly don't remember who the voice belongs to here, so I don't know. Next stop, the clock tower, where Oracle is chatting up Batman. Well, Batman is chatting up Oracle, rather. He's the one who made the phone call here. And he did so in order to be directed to a place where large groups of people congregate, so he can make a major splash and also make his presence be felt far and wide across No Man's Land. He even asks if there's anywhere where people gather to worship. Like Father Chris's cathedral? Like where you were yesterday? Anyway, Babs directs him to Ozzy Cobblepot's next Trade-a-Palooza soiree. And Batman is down to crash that party. Worth noting, the new Batgirl's here too, but she's told by Batman not to try joining him or interfering in this mission. Though, before he leaves, he does tell her that if he doesn't make it back, Gotham is all hers. Woohoo. From here, we hop over to Penguin's all-new, all-different Iceberg Lounge, and we see the man himself standing on stage to introduce the night's festivities. You see, he's got some dudes. Including the would-be battery scammer, they're all lined up off to the side. And they're there waiting to be thrown into the ring with a giant wrestler called Dozer. Now, just as the first poor unfortunate soul is about to mix it up with the muscle machine, the Batman arrives. Penguin comments that he's heard Batman was around, which, I mean, haven't they already had at least one or two face-to-face meetings at this point? I don't know. Anyway, that is where we leave it. Next time out, we're going to be wrapping up this two-parter in Shadow of the Bat number 85. But what did we think about this issue? You know, without the complaints I've already made regarding the order of these arcs, and you know, at the end of the day, the order of the arcs probably doesn't matter so much, does it? But I'm not sure how many more times we need to read about Batman reestablishing himself in No Man's Land. Is the we're 3 for 3 right now. But if we were to take that out of the equation, this was a really good issue. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm really digging everything they're doing with the Penguin here. I love him as this this just underground auctioneer trading in and out of Gotham, where, you know, those supply chains or supply lines are supposed to be eradicated completely, yet you know, Ozzy finds a way. I really dig that. And going back to our title here, Bread and Circuses, this little soiree fits that bill here. And you know, bread and circuses are usually used as a distraction, right, by the people in power. Penguin is the one in power here. Not sure if the show or the festivities are to kind of distract from the fact that he's taking 10% of everything. Because, I mean, 10% of everything is a lot. And all he does is facilitate. You know, the value he adds is via his contacts and his means, which, I mean, you got to figure any No Man's Lander with, you know, the interest to do so could probably find those means themselves and, you know, kind of position themselves in the seat of power. But, you know, Penguin here, he's got them distracted. He's got them watching a show. He's got them watching people fight to the death, perhaps. It's kind of like, you know, how all drinks are free at the casino, you know, just to keep you distracted and keep you happy and keep doing what you're doing. And it probably ought to go without saying that these fights are going to be bet on. So we're going to have fights that are being bet on, and the Penguin's taking 10% of everything. So that's not a bad night's work or a bad night's take for the Penguin. Now let's shift gears and talk a little bit about our friends in the GCPD who just lost a guy and very nearly just were wiped out by the gangbangers here. I really like that the character Foley is there to voice a lot of the inconvenient concerns, because it seems pretty simple that, you know, if a city is broken into territories, each run by a different group or some sort of gang or however you want to name them, it would stand to reason that the goal would be to expand territory and take over as much as possible and, you know, ultimately have complete control, which I'm pretty sure that's what Gordon is looking for here. I don't think he wants to run a police state, but I think his designs are for a Gotham City, a no man's land that still respects law and order. I'm not sure what, you know, part two of the plan is, if it's reintegration with the United States, if it's just being able to live peaceably and without fear in no man's land for those who remained. But the goal here, clearly from Gordon's point of view, is to spread as far and as wide as possible. Whereas Foley, he's been steadfast since we met him that, you know, hey, we have X amount of neighborhoods, X amount of blocks right now. Let's fortify these blocks. We're safe here. Let's not think too big. Let's not spread ourselves too thin, because there's only so many of them, right? And even if they recruit, who are you going to recruit? Bad guys, you know? The people who stayed behind are bad guys. So are you going to recruit them? Are you going to trust them with your turf? Are you going to trust them not to turn on you? Are you going to trust them to not all join together themselves and then turn on you? It's a dicey and very uncertain situation. So I'm happy we have a guy like Foley who's like, hey, this is our turf. We're safe here. We need to be satisfied with that for now. But Gordon ain't listening. And it's also a sign of how respected Gordon is here, because everybody else is just blindly following. And, I mean, we have evidence of the fact that there aren't enough of them to do what Gordon wants to do. If Bullock hadn't lost 50 pounds, he'd be dead after being, you know, speared through the gut. But yet, he still follows Gordon. He doesn't question commands. He is still on point with anything the commissioner says. We know Hardbach, he only remained because Gordon stayed. The world is so topsy-turvy right now that the only person speaking sense is Foley, and he's looked at like he's a dick. I mean, Bullock here is threatening him, you know? He's daring him to say anything negative toward the commish. And at that very moment, Gordon was carrying the body of a dead officer, an officer who he put in the line of fire. It's very interesting how topsy-turvy it is, how upside down civilization has become in no man's land. Now, sticking with the commish a bit, he was visited by somebody. Somebody we don't know who it is. And honestly, I don't remember who it is. So I have suspicions. You know, he did mention jokes a lot. I'm not sure I could see. I think I would remember if Gordon and the Joker teamed up. But I'm thinking maybe that was just a red herring, you know. But the fact that he was visited by someone bad who wanted to make a deal, I don't know what that speaks more to. Does that speak more to the gutsiness of the bad guys? Or does that speak to Jim Gordon's reputation beginning to precede him? You know, where even the bad guys know that Gordon is operating under an, you know, by any means necessary sort of methodology. There's a lot of stuff to consider there, and I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out. Because, did Gordon make a deal? He said he's listening, right? Is he going to turn whoever this voice belongs to down? Is he going to turn them down, but they're going to do something anyway? Yeah, we got a lot of questions, and, you know, we'll see some of them answered before long, but not all of them. So this will be kind of a slow drip for the next little while, and definitely looking forward to seeing how it plays out. But I think that's about all I got to say about this issue. It was a good one, which isn't much of a surprise, since everything, you know, No Man's Land proper, minus Azrael, has been really, really good stuff. But I think that's all I got to say about this one. And we're going to be skipping the mailbag today because I might have to run out and buy a dishwasher. So I will get to the mailbag next time. But of course, if you'd like to be a part of that mailbag, I invite you to write in. You can find me all those various ways. Chris is on infiniteearth.com, chrisandreggie.podbean.com, weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com. Also, all the social places that I forget to name every single time out. But with all that said, I'd like to thank you all so much for choosing to spend some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it.